travelers, and welcome to the Way of the Showman, where we view the world through the lens of showmanship. I am Captain Frodo, and I will be your host and gracious guide along the way. And here I am again, inside the caravan, in Kristiansand, in the forest. I'm sure you can still hear the birds and planes that go by. Not so far away is the highway that brings people in from all over Norway to come to this wonderful park to see yours truly appearing as himself in a circus production inside the park. So, yeah, this is the surroundings that I'm in, and it's all very exciting to go through all these conversations that I have coming up for you. It's actually lots of stuff in the works at the moment. I have a whole bunch of episodes, possibly another 8 or 10 episodes or so of conversations from my all expenses paid for by me trip to Stockholm to get these conversations, because there is something different that when you are there in person sitting with each other. As we mentioned last time, it's like whenever a conversation is going on, I'm gesturing and I'm making sure that I've been understood, and we egg each other on in a nice way, me and Jay. So just on top of these conversations that we have, I have an ongoing project to record some conversations with magicians. The faithful listener, such as yourself, have noticed that Jay has, well, I don't know if you've noticed it, but Jay has gotten interested in magic. And through that, our conversations has started to be a little bit more about magic. And my background spawned me from magic. It was basically magic that made me a showman. I'd been doing magic with my dad, as people know from hearing about it before. But I have recorded, so I had this incredible thing happen where Mac King, one of my comedy magic heroes in that has a show, possibly the longest running show or something in Vegas. Absolutely amazing guy, and he contacted me out of the blue saying that Nick DeFat, another wonderful comedy magician, had talked to Mac about this podcast, and Mac King had become a listener. And after a bit back and forth on the email, and I asked him to come on the show, and he has already done that. And this little circle, because I'm about to make a mini season of conversations with magicians, and I have so far done the one with Mac King. I'm also recording one tonight with Mario the Maker Magician, which is someone that you should look up. I'm hoping to record one with Nick DeFat and also with Morten, with two N's, who won the FISM Comedy Magic. The FISM is the World Championship of Magic, and last year in Quebec, Montreal, I think, Morten won the World Championship. So I'm hoping to have a conversation with him as well. So there'll be a whole bunch of magic happening over there. Over the next bit, once we're finished with these conversations from Sweden. And the conversation from Sweden, I do think that because Jay has been a teacher at the circus school there for a decade or whatever, or more, I don't actually fully know, Ivar Heckscher, the old man of the circus in his 80s, who have been part of creating two schools and now the circus schools, a school there, and also then Eric Aubrey, who is doing a PhD. He's writing a doctor's thesis on circus. All of these are slightly academic or are have pedagogy or teaching or school kind of as a theme that runs through it. And we then, me and Jay, often ends up talking about how do we communicate something. Because we are at one far end, towards the end of our journey along the way of the showman. And in the school, in particular, I meet them sometimes around the world doing shows, but he meets them when before they're out there fully doing shows, meeting people at the beginning of their journey. So a lot of these conversations asks questions around how do we communicate things we have learned? How do we help or inspire other people to, you know, stand on the shoulders of the giants that we have become, at least in experience. So, and then when we go into the magic, then we will talk about some other completely different aspects of that again. And all the while these episodes are coming out, yours truly, myself, am fully engaged in writing the next season. I've had this week here to I got to make these recordings, but apart from that, I am writing from morning to evening on assimilating. I have a big stack of books, assimilating all of this information, and I am writing. So I am basically 15, 20 episodes into. That's probably about as long as the next season will be, where we will go back to the way that it was in the first season, and possibly even more the way that it was in the second season, where I have a very long essay on the origins of showmanship and the nature of play, and how this how playing and connecting is the foundation from where our craft emerges. And then I will look at how we can then incorporate these ideas into our performances. But most importantly, it is also to illuminate ourselves on the deeper aspects of who we are and where we come from. Because when you truly know who you are, then that shines through. So if you buy into some of these ideas that I will lay forth in the next season, and if you all these ideas that we talk about on this podcast, I do believe that they will sit in you like a kind of reservoir, and even if you don't fully agree with it or whatever, it will still shine through. And I think the audience will see that you're a deeper performer if you, the more you know yourself. And this is something I'm going to really dig into tonight with Mario, the Maker Magician, because I saw him perform last year and saw him lecture as well at the Illusion Convention in Aalborg. It's not in any of those towns. It's actually in Horsens, and it's put on by Steen Pagani. And it was such an eye-opening event for me. I loved it. And I saw Mario, and he is such an authentic, fully three-dimensional performer that I'm really looking forward to bringing you that. And I'm looking forward to bringing you all this, and this is just to give you a scope of what's happening over the next half a year or more. So, but all that said, why don't you just go and buy a t-shirt? And that was a great, great segue. I had reminded myself that I should really try and say this before the end. You know, tell your friends that this podcast exists, and maybe this would be the episode where they jump in straight on the second part of the kitchen conversations with Jay Gilligan in a extremely wide-ranging conversation. And we go straight into the conversation where we left it off last time, which was about using technology to capture conversations, to make transcripts and everything. And we go into one of the favorite technology creators in Stockholm called Teenage Engineering. We mentioned that in the beginning of this one. So they make some very, very cool equipment and small synthesizers and stuff. So all very exciting. I hope you enjoy it as much as I enjoyed it.
Now at Teenage Engineering, they're coming out. I mean, you can get anything. They have a little voice recorder coming out now. And now it's connected natively to this whisper AI thing. So we can transcribe whatever you say into it, which, and you could just buy anything and do that, but whatever. But now I'm thinking now I should just get into the habit of, like, I can listen to your podcast with my headphones from my phone. I'm out on the road. I have that little voice recorder, and then you say something genius. I stop the podcast. I just go, like, Frodo said, blah, 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 and then keep going. And then when I get home, I just plug that into the AI. I get a text file to my email, and then I have my little Word document. That's mm-hmm. a sustainable practice, I think.
Yeah. But for me, then, in the books where I have underlined and written the notes, they still stand there, and I can now go back to them when that project comes up, because that's the thing. Lots of projects going on in my mind, and then now is the time to work on the Illuminated Showman thing.
Mm.
Through moves that I make or whatever, and then I send it to you, and then there's a conversation, and all of a sudden that's just like gone to the step of going, that could happen now. If this was going to happen in 2 months or in 3 weeks, it now could happen, and I would feel like it's an improvement of a show from 2013.
Yeah.
And then I can start to pull out through my notes and pull out the different things that relates to this specific show or to those acts or whatever that's in the show.
Man, it's so crazy how important these infrastructures are, and it's so crazy how little time and effort I have invested in having any of these infrastructures.
You're thinking of how to save conversations.
Yeah, like Eric had a genius idea a few years ago, and ever since I've heard it, I can't get it out of my mind. We were talking about the best way to have it.
Eric Albright.
Yeah, a juggling program at the school. Like, hey, we want to have a good juggling education at a circus school. Like, what do we need to do? And Eric was like, well, you know, because Ivar talks about this too, but Eric's like, oh, you know, you should always, like, the students never have, like, a computer that works with enough space on the hard drive to film videos on a phone that can film good video and transfer it and document and archive. And me and Eric kind of take that for granted. I mean, if we make a new show, we'll film stuff and I'll throw it on a folder on my laptop, not in a good way, but, like, I can do that. And then Eric's like, so maybe one of the first things we do is, like, if you get accepted into the school, you get a letter. Congratulations, like, you're welcome to come to the school. Before you show up, you need to make sure you have a computer with this minimum requirements.
Mm.
You know, it's like almost like you get an application from a store and it says right there, the minimum requirements.
Yeah.
2 gigs RAM, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's kind of like the school that has a minimum requirement for your computer. And you should have and then the first day of class, we don't juggle. We sit down and we say, everybody get your laptop out. Everybody make a new folder. Do you know how to make a new folder? Oh, you don't? It's like this. Label it, you know, first year. Right? And then we don't start ahead of where you start.
First year, first month.
Yeah.
Kind of.
And you start where you start instead of assuming all those things are kind of there, but you really start from zero. How much free space does your hard disk have? Okay, it needs to have 50 gigabytes because, do you know, when you film video like this, it takes up this many gigabytes, and we're going to film every week maybe an average of, say, 20 minutes of film. Something like this, you know?
Mm.
It sounds insane in one way. It sounds like completely ridiculous to have to start at that level, but you do because the kids...
But it's also like they arrive and don't know, and I think...
Yeah.
Sometimes what happens as well, whether you arrive at an institution or just in your life, you don't... We're thinking of the way you and me were having conversations, and then you went back and you transcribed it, listened to it and took notes.
Yeah.
And in that process, you got a more profound understanding of what we were saying. Because sometimes it's like you say something to me, and then I fire off something to you, which is like, this is the raw deal of what I think about that. And maybe, ultimately, that was all that needed to be said.
Well, frequently, what I found listening back to our conversations is that I misunderstood you like 2 to 3 times a recording.
Okay.
And then the conversation goes on much, much longer, where if I just... misheard a word, or I just took it in the wrong context, or I just I don't know, like, that happens to me a lot. When I go back and listen to conversations I've had with other people, like Ibar, I've done a couple times, and Eric, and you, I'm just like, oh, I totally, like, the second time I hear it, in the flow of things, not being in the moment, but, like, having a bit of a distanced overview, like, oh, I totally got what he meant there, but in the recording, I'm talking just on...
But that's what conversations is about, though.
Which is great, though, in the recording, but that you have the chance to uncover...
Yeah.
Those moments.
But that's it. So that's what the difference is in writing. Why, for me, reading something takes a long time.
Mm.
Like, you sent me this Mystery Loves Company by Max Maven, and there's this sentence there where he talks about shamanism and how he has boiled this down. But that is like, this is, once I've done the season that I'm in writing now on the origins of showmanship,
mm-hmm.
then this is like the almost metaphysical or biological underpinnings of showmanship, and then the next one will be about shaman, from shaman to showman. That's mm-hmm. and I've been thinking about that for ages.
Yeah,
And then you sort of get this sentence boiled down in this essay, and you go, "Yep, that's pretty much it." But I'm going to use 5 episodes or whatever to unpack this one sentence here, and then draw connect it back. To the origins in play and connection, which beautifully comes from Nala's book as well. Not in depth like I'm looking at it, but those two concepts, and then look at it going into the future. What does it mean for us today that this could be seen as one aspect of it? So anyway, like, it's that one sentence that he does here, but you can unpack that to a whole universe or whatever. So in a conversation, though, when there is a misunderstanding or a actual disagreement about it, that's also when it really comes alive as well. Because then what seems blindingly obvious to me needs to be proven to the other person who now might not quite share it, so that you need to come towards something.
Right.
You need to go deeper. You need to look at further context and to see, oh, from that point of view, when Eva says you have to wear all gold, and then you go, I can see why, but I'm not going to buy all gold. But then maybe after that conversation again, you just go, actually, I should do that. And I, in a weird sort of sense, that happened with me and my tennis costume. I did that act for a few years without having a tennis costume.
Yeah.
Now that you see it, it seems like that's not an idea. You're doing tennis rackets and you're wearing a tennis outfit. But it took a couple of years to come up with that thing. Because in my real life, I juggled the Diablo and did the handstand. I did the fire thing, and I did this, and then I squeezed through the rackets, and then I escaped from the straitjackets.
Totally. Or
whatever. And I did all those things.
Yeah.
So the rackets were just something that I did. So why would I point to them by having a tennis costume on?
Totally.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
And I could easily, like when we talked about reworking my show, The Illuminated Showman, there's always within anything that I do where the rackets happen, I now have wedded the tennis outfit to the tennis racket act. So I need to change. In my mind, I need to change. But one thing that hasn't been on the table for a very long time is that I could do the rackets in the pinstriped pants and vest like I used to do in my street show.
Mm.
But that is not on the table anymore. I just don't do it. But now that I'm saying it, I'm going, why have I not thought back to that, where it's just, this is just something that I do, and I'm not pretending that I'm the tennis guy, but that I just...
What did they do for you on Opium? They made you wear some sparkly shorts or something? Or...
Well, basically, they just changed it to blue. They took my my tennis outfit and just made it in shiny neon style, like shiny electric blue.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Good.
It was already... No, I don't know. It's always hard to know why so, but they, you know, it was trying to fit it in with the theme. They let me say everything that I said normally and whatever. And in the beginning, they let me use the music, and then they worked hard to work towards changing that so that it would all fit within, because it is within a space theme, and they wanted to...
Which is funny how they've ended up now with Dennis being the non sequitur thing. Which works amazingly. You could have just been the counterpoint to the show.
Yeah.
But whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever.
It's interesting.
No, the other thing I forgot to say was that, like, so Eric had this idea about the first day of juggling class.
Oh yeah.
We work on your computers. Like, how mundane is that? But, like, and then I said, yeah, but let's go even farther back than that, which is. Instead of cleaning up your laptop. Maybe you should arrive to school and you should have 6 clubs and 6 balls and 6 rings.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's a requirement to get in the door.
Because we don't use this.
And it's just like, because that happens all the time. Hey, guys, we need some rings today. And they're like, I don't have any rings. Okay, why not? Well, I don't juggle rings.
Yeah.
Okay, but, like, we're going to juggle them for now. So, like, you're a juggler and you don't have props. Like, that's a problem. And so we thought maybe the beginning of an education isn't to just assume these basic things of infrastructure, but rather to actually consciously point towards establishing an infrastructure. So reflecting back then on me and you talking, like, right now, we're so into conversations, but, like, I haven't taken the time in my life to build a basic infrastructure for conversations and maybe
for capturing them. Yeah,
maybe I should do that.
We should do that. We should look into that. Get the specific app that we do, because there's so much stuff that we talk about and hash out in short periods of time. And those, it would be better that they were one long file, so that when I record you, I talk to you for the 15-20 minutes that I actually do talk to you, but instead of sending them as 1 minute files, which is going to be a nightmare to splice and do all that, and then you could just stick these things together, so it's just like it's a conversational call and response, and it's an interesting format because then you get this other kind of dialogue. I mean, it's interesting, of course, that that Plato wrote dialogues, because you can't quite get to the truth. That when it's one person writing the whole paper, then you get one truth and they attempt to bring that truth to the front. But when you have the dialogue, then somebody says a partial thing and then the other person responds to that. So you are now developing a different, it's a different way to take things in. And I don't particularly love reading dialogues or reading a play. I find it challenging. But I really fell into it reading the conversation between Derek Del Gaggio and what's his name that he works with? Kayano?
Oh, yeah. Glenn Kaino.
Kaino.
Yeah.
and there was some wonderful stuff in that from a Genie magazine, but it apparently come from this book here. A Secret Has Two Faces. And
yeah,
I got really into it, into the conversation or whatever. But maybe what you and me are presenting, when it's being presented, when you go to the store and when I am doing whatever I'm doing at home, and you get those two juxtaposed together, that making some episodes which are pasted together of these 4 different things. And sometimes I write like 5 or 6 and I keep thinking about it, and then I send you another
totally
5, because you're not busy and you're not offered. So I'm still in the conversation, and it's been going back and forth, and then there's just an unexplained gap of 2 hours where you are making hot dogs for the kids or whatever.
Yeah.
And in that time, sometimes my mind keeps working and I keep tuning that idea or whatever. So it could be, I wonder what that sort of... What it would sound like then, man. Because I do also sound differently when you get to do these long talks or whatever.
Yeah.
But I was taking some notes here, because partly what could also be instilled in people when they arrive at the beginning of the course, and the first thing you do is how to document what's going on in this school. Because when you're talking about art, or you're talking about the creative process or whatever, one way to listen is the way that I'm saying you have to listen to my podcast, and I have, and you have to read this book like that. It's just to read it, and it's okay to read it the first time and think that I'm reading this now to get an overview of what it is so that I can delve into it later. But in reality, that's what all of life is. There is never enough time to delve into everything 100%.
Yeah.
It's
The nature of being alive is that I want this information in this book here now to come into me, but I haven't got time to delve into the full thing. I even watched a 21-hour long course on human behavioral biology by Robert Sapolsky. It was 21 lectures for Yale University. It's available for free on YouTube. Incredible, mind-blowing, deep stuff. As I'm going through it, I still have this thought, oh, I'm going to make this note on where it was, and I'm going to go back to this. When I watch this course one more time, a university course of lectures of the endocrine system and about all this stuff, I'm going, when I watch it again for real, that's when I'm going to take all these notes. But this is the time that I am watching this course.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there will be a time when I later on maybe remember that one episode and go back, and that thing is going to be specifically used when I'm writing the third season, Act as Organism, which I've already touched on how closely related biology and acts are, like the like using the meme and the gene as the foundation for where they come from. But and then maybe I go back and I will find that and I'll pull it in there, but chances are also that that will never happen. I made those, and so the cursory read or the reading to prepare yourself for the proper read, that might just be that it's a state of mind that you and me share, that I haven't had this conversation with anyone before, because I was not shared anything about my method of how I read or the note-taking that I do. So that was one thing. And then the other thing then is, and I got sidetracked again, which by telling the people in the beginning of the course at the circus school in Stockholm, here's the computer, you need to do this. We are pointing to the fact that what you do now is the foundation of your work. You are transforming as a person. And if you aren't transforming as a person when you go to this school for 3 years, then you should quit now. Because if you're just coming in here and you're just going to follow your own ideas and you're just going to do it, then you've already hit the nail on the head of the question that you and Eric and me and everyone is asking, why the heck is there a circus school at all?
Yeah.
And if you already know what you want to do, then just go ahead and do it.
Please.
Because you could probably do it better yourself and you become more refined. But if you do think that this course has something to offer, and it does, when you go through juggling with you, you know, it's not a coincidence that some of these incredible jugglers have gone through a school with you, because your schooling program that we can see on juggling.school that you can look at, it's an incredible thing. But all these, the way to approach juggling, you know, this is not necessarily for you to have value in this very moment. This is for you to have value when you have gone through this cursory going through, and you will go back to it later in your life, maybe if something will resonate later with you. And I think that's what you're instilling in them then. You go on, we put this down, then you transcribe it. If you do this, these lessons will be really deep, and it will be the things that you say in the class. It's just something you say, and then we get to the juggling. And I'm going, okay, how should I throw it over the top now? But then what you're getting in the education is totally shallow, but it's all the stuff that you say, and it's all the ways to think about it, and all the stuff that's going on in this class, the discussions, and the person from Spain who's going like, I refuse to see it as that. It's got to be politics involved. And then you have the other guy here who just goes, it's just, it looks, as long as it looks pretty, that's all I care about. Or, you know, and then those things will shape you. And this goes back to that idea of seniors that Brian Eno has. It's like you've been shaped by the environment that you're in. Whether you like it or not, you can rebel against it, you can dive into it, but the ecology of different opinions and different happenings that happens in an art where you're spending 3 years on it should change you, should make you more you within that.
I mean, I love you said that, because it is students who come back all the time to me and say, oh man, you know, when I was in school, I didn't really, they don't say they regret, but they're just like, I didn't get it. And now that I'm older, I really appreciate when you said X, Y, and Z.
Mm.
And I love it because you're taking that as the reality of what happens and putting it again in a reflection of like from the beginning, which I think is so important.
Yeah.
Instead of pretending that we're doing something else or ignoring the reality or just being distracted by something else and being like, no, we're going to juggle today. It was like, no, hold on. We're starting here a 3-year journey.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's take a moment to breathe and think, what does that really mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And not even a 3-year journey, but yeah.
It is the journey of your life.
Yeah.
Because if you chose wisely now and juggling is what you're going to do or acrobatics, then let's look at it in the big scope first to place this into a context.
Right.
I arrived at Circa Media and wanted to have a 3-ball juggling routine done to music by the time I ended. And you're going like, that you could do somewhere else.
Yeah, and also it's that thing of yesterday being like, 20 years, we're still here. What if you knew 20 years from now we would still be here? What would you have done differently 20 years ago? I think I would have done things differently because at the time, I was like, oh, I'll go to the circus festival and then I'll be done with that. But shit, man, I went there for 20 years.
Yeah.
That's a big thing. And so maybe I would have acted differently or been more like intentional with my energy and my, my creation.
Intentional is very good.
And the other thing you said too was that was killing me was this idea of like, oh, this 21-hour lecture, when I go back and listen to it for real. And the thing that really hits me with that is about being a parent. About being a dad. Fuck, man, I did that. I still do it, but I did it so much with Sindri. As like, you know, something goes with him doesn't go perfectly, or what it could go better, to say in a diplomatic way. And I'm like, okay, fuck, next time I'm gonna do better.
Oh, I do get that too.
And it's like, but then you know, there's no fucking next time. Because they're now they're 8, now they're 9, now they're 10. That hurts.
Yeah.
Or you know what I mean? It's like,
that's right.
It's
like,
hardcore.
It's really hardcore, and you're feeling like you're missing it and all that.
Yeah.
Steiner has something he says about that, where in parenting, or also he says it about parenting, but it's also about teaching, and it is that any person that in any interaction will always be flawed, or it could always have gotten better, but life is always, you can think back to it and all you can do is to improve it in the future. But what he does say is that when the children are faced in a classroom situation with a teacherly authority who is there as a full human being, they see your intentions, not just your flailing moves. So they see there is all these constant little bickerings or whatever, but they can see through to your actual intention in it. And it's the ongoing process of it all, so that you have them through the different subjects and through the different things. They get the spirit of who you are, not through a myriad of details, but through that core that remains unchanging. And if love and respect and a constant looking at it, because I do that with Saskia, I look at her and I get constantly awakened to the fact that there's a different person in a room that wasn't here before. She is being herself differently. It is still her. But all of a sudden I'm like, this is not the same relationship. Yeah. Like, because I'm an old man, I need to alter the way that I perceive her. I need to adapt my situation to the changing thing. And when you go there 9, they're 10, they're 7, it just happens so quick, and they are changing in the beginning. It's like those things are coming like 2 weeks later and there's been a major leap in their way that they perceive the world.
Totally.
And then it's like 8 months later and it's just like we're dealing with completely different things.
Right.
And I often think of that, of like that you go in all my flawed ways of doing this, and like in when
even on a like less dramatic scale, I was thinking just yesterday actually about some students I used to teach at the circus school, some jugglers, and now they're adults out in the world doing stuff, and I cannot see them as anything different than the kids they were in my class. And like they were adults then too, but you know, we had a certain...
Yeah, but they're like 18 or whatever. I thought of myself as an adult then. And I was going, I did my first interrail traveling around on a train, and I'm feeling like what I am. But I was 14 or whatever.
It's so
I wasn't
14,
I was like 16. But now I think back and I'm going like,
yeah.
I am completely a child.
Yeah, I felt
like I was in control of my master of my own fate.
But it's so hard to meet these people now and just meet them as who they are instead of meeting them as who I knew them as.
Yeah.
And I think I go like, oh, I know who you are. You're that person that I had for 3 years who did this and this and this.
Yeah.
And hopefully they're not that person anymore.
Mm.
But it's really hard to like wipe away the...
Yeah, so, and that is like, there's this, I think it's like there's a profound process of listening, and you're listening with your eyes and your ears and your mind and your feelings to what is this person presenting as now in this moment. And that's like, it's, I mean, it is, I guess that's sort of what meditation is to an extent, when you're doing mindfulness and you're just focusing on your breath and you're just seeing what's happening. Thoughts arise and feelings arise and all this sort of stuff just sort of arise and you don't know where it comes from. And the spending time focusing on that, and that you can do that, but you could do that with people too. You got to really be there with them and really see them. I can't do it. Like I constantly second guess myself or go back and think about, I've got to do that better or whatever. And I'm in this process of where I'm going, like I feel like I need to ask her and involve her in this process of and I just read yesterday yet again from this poet David White that I really like, where he described a conversation he had had with his child. And as always, I mean, this guy, when you hear him talk, is this sage dude, calm and well thought through, but then it's just lovely to hear that he too says all the wrong things. It's not awesome in this conversation with their child. And he goes, just as I'm about to make this great summary of of how right I am and how wrong you are and all of this, the child goes, slams the door and goes into their room. And then he's left there going, like, I couldn't have been more wrong in what I did and how I approached this. And then he is trying to formulate, he's talking a lot about that at the moment. He just wrote a book about questions, and he calls them beautiful questions or so, that are open and inviting or whatever. And he goes up and he makes tea, and he goes up and he knocks on the door and he comes in, and then he asks something like, what's one thing that I do as a father that you don't like? And what's one thing that I do that you would like me to do more of? And this kind, those kinds of questions now, it's not him, me, standing there telling her what's wrong, why you shouldn't be watching YouTube shorts, and it's just this random stuff going, and I do it, I fall into that and feel ashamed afterwards that I've just been scrolling for half an hour and I've just been looking at random stuff, and it almost feels like it's stealing your time but not giving me anything back. And to them, they haven't seen that there's so much beautiful stuff in the world, so they're just doing that. And then I'm telling them that, but I'm not asking any beautiful questions that invites a conversation into this or whatever. So yeah, that was another thought and relates in relation to how you meet your children. But they are constantly changing and we are constantly changing, so I don't know. It's you will always fall short. I always, and I get angry and I get into the arguments with my wife, and I'm sure, like, sometimes it's like the other day I had something on my mind that was there and I was just being unreasonable. And my wife was like, what are you doing? Why is it like this? And then I'm so annoyed that, of course, I don't want to say it, because I'm going like, no, I'm fine. But then I say what it is, and then everything actually does then fall into place. And then all the bickering that has happened beforehand of me being impatient and irritable, problem for me just to get irritable all the time with all sorts of situations, going like, this is the wrong emotion to emerge now, but it's so real, I can't, so much struggle to not say that thing or to not just be nah, nah, nah. But sometimes when you do, then it does. Yeah, so I guess it's a constant learning, it never gets easy, you just I think anyway
no I think for me it was just It was so much when I was younger with the kid, where I was like, next time I'm gonna do this better. And just that realization, like, fuck, there's not the next time.
Yeah, no, this was the time that I did it, and this was how I was in that moment.
Yeah.
And to bring that all back to that situation of going, this is true for all parts of life, you will always feel like you should do it deeper, you should do it more.
Mm.
Maybe that is also a gross exaggeration, that a lot of people also don't have that. They just do it and they don't think about it. But for people like us.
I mean, it's funny you say that, because then just randomly I thought, like, then there are those moments in life when you don't think that, and then you feel that there was a significant truth there. Like, Reflective New York, I definitely wasn't like, okay, next time I do my one-man show off Broadway, you know. I was like, no, man, I fucking did it. Like, we did it.
Yeah.
Like, I went all the way. And I felt the same thing, too, in the pandemic. People were asking, like, man, this is crazy. Like, just a month ago, we didn't have COVID. And, like, if you would have known then what you would have known now, how would you have lived? And just coincidentally, I was in Vegas, man. I spent $15,000 a month, brother. Every day, Cheesecake Factory, Playground, Disneyland. Like, we went hardcore for, like, the 3 months I was there. It was amazing. It was, like, I couldn't have lived more fucked up than I did with Miko and Sindri on that trip. Like, we just spent all the money. Because it was the last one. And I don't regret it. It was so fucking fun. And then, like, to come back and a month later, people were like, man, you know, a month ago I was just sitting on the couch doing nothing, and now I'm in lockdown and I wish I would have climbed that mountain. You know what I mean?
And you climbed all the mountains and did all the rides.
We
lived it to the max.
Yeah. And I was just like, thank God I did. Like, that's so cool. Like, literally the week before we left, we went to Disneyland. Like, we shouldn't have, you know, but it was like 1 week before we go, Monday, Tuesday off from absent. Let's go to Disneyland. And we fucking went. And, like, Miku, of course, it was just like, this is a bit much, Jay. Oh, my God, I'm so glad we went, you know?
Yeah.
We're never going to go back.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, and now we went there. It was so cool. So that was just a lucky thing.
Yeah.
But, like, the reflex thing, we worked so hard on it that we did it, and I definitely don't feel like there. I wasn't feeling like, man, when I do this again.
But so that, too, for what happened then during the pandemic, that you and me hooked up, like, we'd met and talked and had these kinds of conversations before, but when you rang me from the playground and said, all right, let's do a project together.
Yeah.
And I said yes. That just also shaped what the pandemic was about.
Mm.
Hours and hours of talking every week in depth, and trying to understand my method and trying to understand how I could approach you. And I was writing my book, which became the second season of the thing at the time. So all of that stuff came together, where I had to prove that these points that I was making, which had become properly theoretical by the time I've just written them down into long thoughts, and then apply them to the specific situations. And I can look back at that and go, oh, I gotta write a proper sort of method for how I do this. But the truth is like, even though when I write down the method, when I wrote down that book to go, these are the things that I think, they need to be translated into practical exercises and stuff. And I still want to do that. The handbook of practical showmanship.
Right,
practical showmanship for illuminated performers of all kinds. And that's one of the topics that I'd like to explore here. In a conversation with you, and also then with a conversation with Eric, and it comes from a podcast that you guys did in March, I think. It doesn't make any sense to you because you record them all at another time, but where he said, he's talking about I can't remember now, actually. You just basically say, well, if you have any theory or anything that you, any idea that you're bringing forth to them, you need to have a very clear and concrete...
I just said that to Eric 2 days ago.
Again, yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, you need a very concrete example. And then I have made a little diagram, or what's it called when you have a little thing, yeah. But not, it's just, you write, like, it's... One example where I can make an example to them is to make an example from my life.
Mm-hmm.
And another example is to make an example from another working artist that they know of, or something in art history that uses this.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other end of that one, then it's that I can make it relevant to students.
Wow.
Like, to the students in the room or the people that you're talking to in general.
Wow.
Like, what are the exercises that they can do? And then the last one is make it useful to them as an individual, and they will be standing in the four quadrants where it's divided into a square with four things, where it's individually you and individually them. That's like a one-to-one kind of thing. But then it's like, how is this valuable to a group? That's kind of what we talk about on a podcast, or when you're in a class and you talk about it and go, these are general things. If you have this in your notes, you will encounter this when you make this work. Or then it, and that links up on a diagonal with
right.
And so I still have no content for those, but it was because I have a large structure that helps me immediately place any kind of work or questions into some relation to practical stuff.
That's
because
cool.
I've thought of those ideas, and I'd like to then, that might be what that book is about, the practical stuff also. And I'd like to talk then about like how you have concretized some of your ideas, and how Eric has concretized some of his ideas. And you are the one that has the most experience in this, I think, from looking at your juggling.school. And although I've probably only seen the first 3 hours of it, how many hours are there? 18 or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, because looking at it, it's a, you're doing a practical thing, and I kind of need to be in a certain frame of mind, because I'm pulling out what's going on here. I'm not actually going through the process.
Sure.
So I watched like the first one, and I watched another couple. So, but to see those practical ideas.
That's so funny you say that. Like, there could be a couple of like different realities, especially of those videos, where, to be completely honest with you, which I think I've been honest with a couple people in my life about it, but not really, you know, 85% of that shit is bullshit. But bullshit in a certain way, where it's like, here's the thing, we're in a class, I have something I have to teach you, or I want to teach you. We have an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours or something, or a week or whatever, but like, how can I directly confront you with the issue? There's a little bit of trickery involved.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's too big to encompass in 3 years of school or a week of school or an hour of school. So a lot of the stuff on like juggling.school and those videos, it's like my core teaching stuff, but like the actual content in one way is, how do you even, I never even put this in the words well, it's to get you in a certain mindset or something.
Yep.
And the certain actual things I'm talking about there is a little bit bullshit if you actually dig below the surface like 1 centimeter in terms of what's literally happening. Like I think on the surface it all adds up. Like I say one thing, we do the other thing, and it kind of all like on the surface makes sense.
Mm.
And you can kind of follow along. I hope you get in the mood of like, oh yeah, this is all working out. I'm going to do like this thing. But in reality, those things aren't, they're kind of adjacent to what I actually do in my life.
Mm-hmm.
In my real work, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they're like a shorthand that it's like, it's almost like my real work is like a foreign language, you know?
Yeah.
And we don't speak the same language, so I'm just using like a shorthand to kind of fake you through the forest until you get to the other side. And I think if you go through those 18 hours and really understand them, like, I mean, physically and like live it, then you can kind of get into the actual work, the actual practice, but it's so unarticulated, and I'm only now being old enough to have any sort of understanding of what I actually do in my work. And this is a great conversation for Eric, because I think he's so much farther along in this process than me. Like, I always see him, he's so much better at, like, living what he actually says. Like, I say things that sound good. Like, that's been a problem of mine when I was in school, when I was, like, in grade school or high school. I learned very quickly to know what to say in order to get through, but I didn't necessarily believe it. But I could look sincere. Do you know what I mean? So that I could get the highest marks and I could play the game really well. And at the time, I thought it was just fun. I was just like, oh, this is funny. Like, I'm going to speak like this over here, and I'm going to speak like this over here, and I'm going to say this thing here, and then I'm going to navigate through it. And it just looked like a game to me. But now I regret acting like that as a kid because I didn't actually learn anything. Yeah, I just learned how to talk shit, kind of, like in the system. And so I think that's a little bit of the juggling that school is like, I can talk shit pretty good to like get through certain situations. Like, I have you for an hour of school and you're doing cigar boxes and you're doing foot juggling and you're doing clubs and we should all have a class together that doesn't suck. So I can kind of talk shit to like fake my way through it. But I think there is a core practice that is real that I just haven't uncovered yet.
No, but I think...
So in terms of concretizing concepts, there is a reality. Like, juggling that school is not worthless. And between you and me, like, the actual mechanics of the work and the actual uncovering of the work, it's a little bit, like, adjacent to the truth.
I don't know. I think that might also be because of where you are now. And that's that first... cursory thing, and what you genuinely hope in an artist is that when you come back and see them, it's what they had before, but it is even more now. And that what you are dealing with now is that you're looking back at work that was developed. Some of that was probably developed when you first started teaching, and you're still doing it.
Sure.
Now you have a greater overview. And the lessons that you have gathered there, 18 hours of teaching from a long time ago, and it's not that it is bullshit or that it isn't, but you now go, it's not adequately capturing it anymore. Because when I look at it...
That's a good way to say it.
Yeah, it's not that it's useless or that it is bullshit, but you needed to go through that work to get to whatever it is that you're going to do now.
They were talking, Danny D'Ortiz on another interview recently, was saying something about, like, I don't think it was the Mike Close one, but maybe it was. I think it was another one, where he was, like, his friend had got him to publish some lectures from, like republished, like, from 13 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And Danny was like, oh, I'm not publishing that. That's, like, 13 years old. And the friend had convinced him to put it out because now Danny's so famous, basically. I mean, Danny didn't say that, but that's what he meant. That, like, having his notes from 13 years ago would be a valuable resource into the we can see
development of an artist.
And so it's almost like you have the this is a bad example because I don't care, but like Paul McCartney, like, you know, do you know what I mean, like the Beatles catalog, and then you get the Paul McCartney's like notebook when he was 14 and you see the chord progression there and you're like, oh, I get it now.
He
had kind of done that with Danny D'Ortiz to be like, but Danny, if we publish this and people can start to understand more the depth of your work now.
But you see the trajectory, and to those of us who care about the craft,
right,
it's not just valuable to see how Picasso painted these paintings and then he decided to paint the next ones. It's like you endlessly dig into an artist's life in that point, or a philosopher's life. What was it that triggered this change? Or what was it that triggered this development in them? And you try to pin down how the greatness came, or whatever. How was this novel written and great?
I mean, the juggling at school stuff was basically an effort to... not do that stuff anymore. Like, I wanted to record it and put it publicly and then just fucking be done with it so I can do something else now.
But, and all of that then, the way that you talk about it now, seems, it's like you're dealing with this stuff that doesn't fully resonate with you as truth because it doesn't quite get to the truth. And to get to the truth of art is impossible. It's this thing that I say, it's a multivalent thing, and you look at it, it's a multifarious object of
concept. Okay, I'm with you. Now I can say it. You helped me figure this out. And then, so even jumping from that, the problem is this. So there's juggling.school, which doesn't quite get to the truth of what I really think it is now, or like I learned stuff since then, obviously, like you said. So then I feel like I'm even farther ahead of where the juggling.school stuff is, but I think the juggling.school stuff is already too far ahead for the audience.
general
students. Do you know what I mean?
So well, it's like, but that's also okay though, because we are working in quite esoteric circles with this. And I don't like, because when we've been talking about what do you do in a school, you need a very special eclectic kind of person to be of value for them. But when you're taking a 3-year course at the university, I'm sometimes surprised, and it's why I keep flirting with the idea that I should do a university course, because I write an essay, like I'm doing, like I'm writing a book now, I'm 40, almost 50,000 words into writing about play and neoteny and all these different topics that I'm writing about. And to me, it's like, I'm just writing this thing and I'm doing a lot of reading. But other people use the words, oh, I study. This,
yeah,
and then I'm an author and I'm writing this thing, and I'm, to me, it's just like I always look at myself as just being so shallow on what I do, like, but at university, that's why I want to talk to Eric about the PhD, because he is doing the real shit. He's in the university doing all that, and I know that's not the thing.
Yeah.
But I will talk to him about that.
Absolutely.
Because there's a part of me that wants to know or to think that I am doing what he is doing.
When you talk to Eric, oh yeah, dude, yeah, you'll find out. But when you talk to him, really get him to explain to you the difference between the academic university and the artistic university, because that's something I never conceived of. And I met a guy recently who was doing circus, who came through town here, and he wanted to talk about like academic stuff. We had lunch, and he comes from the world, he's a circus dude, but he comes from the world of academic university. And I tried to explain to him, dude, from what I understand from Eric, because the only reference I have for anything is from Eric about university in reality. And I was just like, man, every starting point you're coming from in this conversation is from an academic viewpoint. And you can't do that. Artistic research, artistic university stuff, it's completely different. Like, yeah. So, and Eric, I think, can articulate the difference, and I can't. Like, he's told me. But he's researched it. He's looked into it and figured it out for himself, at least.
Mm.
So I think that's a really good starting point.
I think, like, it's really good, yeah.
Like, what do you, like we think, like or not me. I used to think, like, oh, yeah, he's doing a circus PhD. There's also, like, a history PhD, a chemistry PhD, a painting PhD. But no, like, academic stuff, like chemistry and history and math, that's, like, so different than even... I think maybe even a painting PhD is way different than what he's doing in terms of artistic PhD. But
I mean, yeah, I mean, of course it is.
But definitely, like the fundamentally, conceptually, I think he's figured it out, or he had it at one point. I don't know if he still remembers, but I remember him telling me it all.
But I want to talk about that.
That's
and,
cool. That's cool. Because I know he's spent a lot of time working on that.
But it's and that's why I want to transcribe or somehow use that thing that I sent to you, because I realized within there I already formulated myself pretty good in those 9-minute long of what education and why education sort of ties this together, because when you think a lot about what we do, as like I've done in my The Way of the Showman, I've thought through what performance is, and it's a point of view and whatever. And the book that I, or those episodes, they explain to you a way to look at the world and a way, and that is in a sense then a teaching, or it's a conversation that I have with someone. So it's already fulfilling its purpose or whatever. But that then, how does that, you make that come alive in the world? And that is to deepen the conversation with the people, and it is what we're doing now. How do I translate this? Mm. And that is, without a big leap, it's a form of teaching.
Mm.
Just like it's also a form of show. Mm. It's me talking to them and them listening, and we're getting into some sort of dialogue where you hope that you're going to get it. And that's why, like, when we all have these ideas and you have specific ideas, how do you develop the juggler into an artist, because that, I guess, is in a sense what your course is about. It's not just about, hey, when you make an act, if you're going to be booked at a traditional circus, this is how you do it. If you want to get booked at a contemporary circus, this is the costume and this is how you're going to... Mm-hmm. Like, it's not that kind of level of stuff that you're doing, mm-hmm. which... To an extent, people might think. You come there and we're going to learn, first we juggle cascade, then you learn the tennis, then you learn the half shower, and then you learn shower. Because if you do that in that sequence, then you get... That's not how you teach.
Yeah.
At the circus school in East Germany, that was how they taught.
Yeah.
They taught you this act. Totally. And the act was like this, and then you do this trick. And within there, there might be some small room to change it. I just spoke to a foot juggler who started school there in 1981. Spoke quite a lot to her.
Nice.
Ancha Poda, foot juggler, amazing stuff. But very fun, and just great to hear somebody who went to that, living in the school together with other students and under the Soviet-style thing. And you learn the acts like this. Yeah. And the circus, the state circus, goes, we need foot jugglers in 4 years.
Yeah.
Who is it going to be? Yeah. Somebody in the school goes, you and you are going to be foot jugglers. There you go. It's a whole different thing.
Yeah.
But it sounds abstract when we say it here now, that you juggle this and then you juggle the cascade and then you do this and you teach them an act and you go up.
Yeah.
And with this act, you can be a juggler in any circus in the world.
Totally.
You could have done that.
Totally.
And pushed them to that. But you're actually... preparing them to be artists. And all of our references and stuff comes from art, and not everybody's doing that. And maybe what Eric is doing, and me to some extent, is that we're coming slightly more academic, or more, it's more in the mind. And it's it's a thinking kind of thing what we're doing, and that influences, but that's maybe more a reflection on me and Eric. And the teaching them the exact act is a will act. It's just you just teach them the material. There it is, and this is how it is. Eventually you'll tweak it and it'll be fully yours, and then you'll have a career. And we're in this sort of art now, where the heart is and how feelings are and how all of this sort of connects a little bit. And you're looking for the method because you can't tell them the truth, but you're telling them 18 hours of stuff where you're just circling around.
Well, I asked Ibra about that about a year ago, and I said, I'm really frustrated in my sometimes in teaching, because I feel the stuff I need to say to the students, not for me, but for them, the stuff they need to hear, it's impossible for them to listen to that.
To hear it? Or
yeah.
You can say it, but they don't hear it? Or you...
Both things. I can say it to them, but they can't understand it, or they can't hear it, because they're too... They have
it
no...
It doesn't resonate.
We're in an art gallery. I'm juggling with color. It's that same context again. It's just so far removed from where they are. I'm not saying I'm so far above them, but it's just literally the...
Well, it's just far removed, yeah, because you might have your room down or up or sideways or whatever.
It's so far removed, yeah, that, like, they just can't, take it in.
And why is that? Is it because they are at a completely different part of their journey, or is it just that they're just different people and quite literally from a different generation?
Everything. It's
all of the above.
Yeah, it's everything.
Yeah.
It's expectations. Like, why do they think they're going there versus, like, why do I think they're going there? It's their personality, it's their generation, but it's also the culture of the school, it's the whatever. But I asked Ibar, I said, so what do I do about this? And he said the right answer, or he said an answer that I could believe was a good answer, but, like, I just can't fucking do it. His answer was, okay, because he kind of recognized it immediately. He's like, oh, I know what you're talking about, but this is what you should do.
And he said, wear gold.
He said, yes, if you have like life lessons or truths to tell them that they're not ready to hear for whatever reason,
mm-hmm.
what you need to do is you need to plant the seeds of those lessons so that they will eventually grow into the position where they can hear those truths later on when they're out of school.
Yeah, so that is gold, and this is why at the beginning of the teaching, that you need, this is the computer, and this is what you need to do with this information, because a lot of the stuff that we talk about now will not feel valuable to you in this moment.
Mm.
Because, and write this down, you will say, should I wear gold? Should I juggle over the top for the tennis? Should I do two rounds of the cascade or four? And we will look back at this later on and going, and you will say, I was asking the wrong questions. Mm. So as a point of example, I, as a 17-year-old boy, wrote about Northern mythology as the last year of school. You do, it counts as a 4-hour-a-week subject. You write a thing. I wrote about Northern mythology through a complete whim, and the one and the other one of the teachers at the school has strong connections to Iceland. Through one thing and the other, I lined up and got to go to a meeting with the head of the Åsatroana, the Pope, mm-hmm. of Odin and Thor and,
yeah.
and that of the people who still believe those things today,
yeah.
in Iceland, because that happens in America, it happens a bunch of places, but Iceland is like the Vatican for mm-hmm. the Northern mythology as it is alive today,
mm-hmm.
the Åsa faith. I arrived there talking to him, and the same with an anthroposophical writer in Oslo that I also got to meet through.
Yeah.
And I arrived with questions that are like, oh, it says here that he is there. Did he have this hat on or did he not have the hat on? Mm. I can't remember exactly the questions, but like, Thor did this thing, where did he go after that? So I'm like, it's the literal stuff that's in the books or whatever. So you ask me in your, like...
Yeah.
But it was because I was 17.
Yeah.
I couldn't see the big pictures and I got access to two incredible people.
Yeah.
I've read it back. It's not embarrassing to read what I have said.
I know what you mean, yeah.
But I see from when I find some of the notes of what I was asking that that person was talking to a greater young man than what I was at the time.
Because
I was so ignorant in my questions.
Mm.
And I think that's why it's so important to ask them to take notes and to write all this, because this will become valuable later. And I know this sounds like a bunch of bullshit to you now, but these notes, when you go back at them, don't just write down a sequence in stick figures of how you could maybe do an acrobalance act with someone that goes like this, because that level is, that's going to happen anyway. You can look at that on YouTube and find cool sequences or think up some yourself.
Mm.
There is something else that's happening here that has to do with you developing yourself as an artist. And you will get these ideas. If you're a serious artist and you're not just in this to do this 3 weeks and then you're going to start making coffees and that's going to be your career, or you're going to become an astrophysicist instead, then this is just you just having a good time, it's all good. But if you are an artist and you're going to be doing it, then you will have these ideas. But what I'm trying to do is that these ideas that I have had from doing it for 20 years, I want you to have them now, so that you've thought them and thrown these away. Because I am now in the process of throwing out this teaching that I'm doing to you now, and I tell my friend about it in secret that it's actually now bullshit. Yeah. But it wasn't bullshit when you made it up.
Mm.
But 20 years after you started to teach, I want to throw all of that out, because it's not real.
Mm.
But it was real, and now I'm doing the next thing which is real, and I want you to start already throwing away the first 20 years of my practice out, and I'm going upwards from there.
Yo, okay, but you just figured something out. Now you kind of defined that feeling. Me and you, and everybody, whoever, we're growing through where we are. Like, I'm growing in my work from where I am right now, right? But I keep meeting these people who are at the start of their journey.
Yeah.
That's weird. That's the dichotomy there. So it's almost like, and sure, that's the situation we're in. And I recognized that already before. The students who met me 20 years ago are stuck with meeting the students who meet me now. They're stuck with where I am in life, and that's their problem.
Mm-hmm.
I fully recognize that. Because if they would have met me 20 years ago, we would have been counting to do the cascade 4 times or 2 times.
Mm-hmm.
That was where I started.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what they needed then. That's what they were stuck with. I mean, we got through it. We had a lot of good time in 20 years. And now I do recognize that in the past few years when I have these exhausting moments of like, oh, this isn't, like, I'm not getting through to them. Where I'm just like, fuck, they're like 15 years too late for me. Like, they wish they would have been there 15 years earlier so we could work on the the cascade over the top.
But
now, and now they're with me. So maybe there is part of that context of, like, I keep meeting people who are at the beginning of their journey, like, over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm continuing my journey from where I am, and I'm already quite old, so I'm quite far. And in one way you could say, well, that's the situation we're in. It's the Bachelor of the Arts course at the University of the Arts for circus and juggling, and this is who you are, and this is who they are, and this is what we do, and there's no perfect answer, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But also, it would be nice, in addition to that, we could meet people who are also farther along on the journey to have another conversation with.
But they do that. So I just met spoke with some people at a friend, Jess Love, is doing some teaching at the circus at NICA, the National Institute of Circus Arts in Melbourne, Australia.
I know Jess.
And she hooked. She had a bunch of those students in Adelaide Fringe, and they came and saw some shows and whatever, and then they said, she asked me, can I come?
Mm.
And then I got me and Paul DeBeck and Charlie Caper, and we went and had a conversation with them and tried to talk practically or whatever, and it worked really good, because Paul was so practical on and things.
You're planning to get in before the New Year's deadline for the taxes, kids.
Yeah,
guys.
It was so good. He spoke sort of like a bit from a producer's point of view, and it was so, so down to earth. And I'm, as you know, get quite philosophical or whatever about it. And Charlie was also a little bit. He's a little bit more philosophical like me, but in his whole completely different way. So that was like it. Felt like a good mix for the kids. And so anyway, that was just, that's how they do it. They have working artists coming in and talking to the kids.
But I mean, but yeah, and
not kids, but
Eric was talking about that yesterday. Even he's like, we got to get some working artists to come in and meet the students here at the school. But what I mean is, like, which I, you also know what I mean, I'm just saying for myself, but like, I don't want to meet these kids anymore. I mean, I do, that's fine, we can do that, but also I want to meet the kid I had 20 years ago.
Yes, that's right. So,
do you know what I mean?
I know. And I guess the thing is, within a university context, this stuff happens.
Exactly.
Professors hate teaching the first years.
Well,
so, like, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, where you go, because you can't talk about what you're passionate about now.
Right.
You have to go back and teach the stuff that they need to do. So
right.
You have your version of teaching
them
art history 101.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But within there now, when you go back and teach it, that course, it's a new class, and it isn't going to be the same course, even though you're using your same notes and saying the same things. You're going to tweak it, like I'm doing an updated version of a show from 10 years ago.
Sure.
Tweaking it. In that process, the seeds will be for where you are. And chances are that by the end of the 3 years, you want to get to that point, and then you start to have certain kids who start to grasp who you are and what you... And then some of them will have gone through that whole journey that you couldn't. So you, those kids who really listen to what it is can now have gotten the 20 years plus the additional 7 since that, where you've changed your thinking, and they got it. Because those seeds are now in the prior.
Mm.
So it's almost like within the program, you can't just always start at the end, because they need to get there. And that's why, like, Eva, because these things have been baked into the world of education.
Right.
All right. Taking another break here. For the needs of the child. Ah, there's some exciting stuff going on a video game. So, yeah. Taking another break. We're about to go out to a teenage engineering kind of thing soon, so you might have to have a break soon. All right, that was the second of the two kitchen episodes. The audio on those are a little bit, compromised. We are inside the kitchen. There are some washing and stuff going on at the same time. Because this is the problem when you have a life and you are an artist. These two things keep getting on top of each other. And you can only really, it's like there's so many projects to be done. And like we talked about today, like there is never enough time to do everything. The world will always be filled with more projects and more things that you can dig yourself into and dig into and get excited about. So with that in mind, we've
put the stopper on today's episode, and in 2 weeks I will bring you another very exciting episode, and then we will start to delve deep into how the artistic process is, which me and Jay have done before. This time it's with a new show, and Jay, it's always exciting to hear him talk and think out loud about the process. I don't know many people who spend quite as much time developing an idea. So, next episode will be the first of three about another sunset. And you will find out why sunsets on Mars is blue. So until next time, take care of yourself and those you love. And I hope to see you along the way.